Case number 13-1146, Remington Lodging and Hospitality, LLC, petitioner versus National Labor Relations Board. Mr. Cantor for the respondent, Mr. Terrell for the petitioner.
May it please the court, Jared Cantor on behalf of the National Labor Relations Board, in support of our motion to transfer, I would request 4 minutes for rebuttal. Your Honors, 2 points. It is undisputed that within 10 days of issuing its order, the Board received a court-stamped copy of a petition for review from only one party, the Union, in the Ninth Circuit. Second, 28 U.S.C. 2112 unambiguously provides that where, as here, the Board has received a court-stamped copy of a petition for review from just one party, the Board must file the record in that court, notwithstanding any other petitions for review challenging that order in other courts of appeals, and that those courts of appeals must then transfer those petitions to that designated court.
Do you agree that the ECF-stamped copy that you got from the court was court-stamped for purposes of the statute, and just the only issue is it wasn't from Remington?
Correct, Your Honor. We would agree that it was stamped at the top with the date and time of filing and the documents.
The electronic numbering on there counts as a date stamped by the court for purposes of the statute.
Correct, Your Honor. We do accept that under the statute as a court-stamped document.
And then what does the word from mean to you in the statute?
To the Board, Your Honor, and to the courts that have looked at this, we would say that the statute is very explicit that from means it is from the party directly, that it is not, as Remington advances here, that by providing 5 paper copies to the court, which the clerk then scanned and then sent to us as part of an administrative duty, that doesn't constitute from.
Well, what do you mean by directly? Because I assume you're not requiring under the statute hand delivery.
Correct, Your Honor. Mailing is sufficient on the Board, but that it has to be from the party, that it cannot be from the party through the clerk's office to us.
Why is the clerk's office different than the post office? You have an intermediary either way.
Well, the post office's duty would be to transmit mail.
Well, doesn't the clerk have a duty under the rules to transmit a copy to you as well?
The clerk has an administrative duty under 160F under the National Labor Relations Act to send us a copy. But that is different than the duty imposed under the Act, or under 2112, for the petitioner, in this case Remington, to directly send it to the Board. And that is a conclusion that...
I guess I'm still trying to understand what you mean by directly, because we're conceding that third-party intermediaries can be used if they have a duty. The post office, when you put a stamp, put it in the mail, has a duty to deliver it. But the clerk's office, under the rules, has a duty to deliver the petitioner's petition to you. So I'm still having trouble distinguishing those two situations.
Well, Your Honor, we would advance that while the clerk's office has the duty, the purpose of the petitioner having that duty to directly send it to the Board and not to pass off that duty to the clerk's office is because the statute that they're trying to take advantage of here has a benefit to them, and that is the random selection of venue. And Congress has seen fit under the first 2 sentences of subsection A1 to grant parties relief from the race to the courthouse, and in exchange, Congress has imposed burdens that previously were not there, and that is that the party must send it to the Board, that the Board has to receive it from the petitioner, which is the exact statutory language, that it must be received from the petitioner.
But here the petitioner asks the clerk of court to make sure you got it, consistent with the clerk of court's duty under the rules, just as the union in the Ninth Circuit case asked the post office to deliver it to you.
Well, Your Honor, it's not entirely clear from the affidavit whether 2112 was discussed or that the clerk was giving some type of advice that what the clerk's office was doing satisfied the obligation. We would agree with...
I don't think they have to discuss whether it's... I mean, we're trying to decide whether it satisfies the obligation here as a matter of law, not based on discussions that happened there.
Well, we would point the court to its previous... It admittedly, essentially all the law in this area, such as it is, are unpublished orders, that this is not an area other than the JPML, which itself has said that these are strict statutory requirements and that it has strictly construed the from to mean from the party and the court-stamped meaning what it says, that is a court-stamped copy. And we would point to the Second Circuit's decision in Local Union 36, and again, by when I say decision, their ruling in that case on a motion to transfer, where the court expressly rejected that the clerk's serving of the copy, the clerk of the court serving a copy on the board, somehow satisfied the movement's obligation there.
Yeah, but your position in that case was that even what the Second Circuit held was proper service was not service in that case, right? You argued against the position the Second Circuit ultimately adopted. I mean, you personally, I mean the board.
Correct, Your Honor. In that case, the petitioner tried to move it away from the Second Circuit, and we argued that the motion to transfer, there should be no transfer there because the board had not received the copy of the movement's petitioner in that case because, once again, correct, Your Honor, yes.
I think in that case they had done that was the electronic filing question.
Correct. In the Second Circuit, yes, was electronic filing.
When Remington's attorney had come to the clerk's office physically in person to file the petition, and it so happened that you were in the clerk's office for your own reasons at the time, and if Remington's counsel said to the clerk, oh, can you go ahead and give it to him right now? I need to give him a copy of the petition so he knows that we filed it. And so the clerk would just hand it to you right then and there. You know it's coming from Remington. Would that satisfy 2112?
Under those unique circumstances where we're both in front of the clerk's office, I would still have to say that I would not be the appropriate person to be received.
Well, whoever the appropriate person for the board happens to be in the clerk's office at exactly that moment.
Maybe the chairman's there, or maybe the whole board's there for some reason.
Well, if the designated agency person
is a reception,
happened to be there, and yeah. Counsel for Remington, I would still advance, handed it to him, or as Your Honor's hypothetical implies, that the copy is handed to the clerk stamps it, and then when the clerk hands it back out again, the board person picked it up. I suppose that's what Your Honor is implying, that the copy does not go back to Remington.
Right. That Remington just says, oh, great, just go ahead and hand it to him or her right now.
Under the strict reading of the statute, that would probably not be from Remington, under that hypothetical, if Remington had left, unless there was somehow some near simultaneousness. But it still is similar to the clerk then being the agent of service of this, where it's supposed to be the party directly serving it on the board, because that would then get down the slippery slope of, well, under that case, but what happens if there was a little bit more lapse in time? And if that is sufficient, then why wouldn't it be sufficient as well for the clerk to mail it later that day or to instantaneously transmit it via CMECF?
I'm not sure quite what the slippery slope is here, because as long as you get it within 10, you've got the 10 days protection. So as long as you get it within 10 days and you get it at the direction of and with the intention of the petitioner, why isn't that?
No. Well, it's because Congress has set forth these strict requirements, and in order for a party to, the benefit to the parties is no longer the breakneck and sometimes ridiculous race to the courthouse that used to happen in the 70s and 80s. And in exchange, Congress said, there's this 10-day window now where everyone will be equal and you'll all have random selection of venue. So there's that benefit. But in exchange, we're imposing on the parties these hurdles to jump through. And the hurdle is that the board has to receive from that party the date-stamped copy from the court. And the Second Circuit has taken that view. The JPML itself, which is tasked with random selection, has taken that view. And this court has taken that view in DirecTV and in its decision in Omaha, where in Omaha it noted that the petitioner in that case did not itself serve the copy on the board. So all the decisions, such as they are, that are out there, are consistent on this point.
And just to be clear, you concede or agree that the union's petition was properly delivered for purposes of the 2112. There's no issue about that?
Correct, Your Honor. There has been no challenge to the union's petition, and I would advance that it's undisputed at this point that the union's petition
was delivered. Well, you concede, because if there's any issue about that, then could be in the situation where neither one was properly delivered. So I want to make sure that you concede and agree that that was properly delivered for purposes of 2112.
Correct, Your Honor. The issue here is solely the sufficiency of the company's petition.
For motion to transfer, 2112A5 is explicit that the transfer is to the court in which the record has already been filed.
Correct.
And you, for quite understandable reasons, the board has not yet filed the record anywhere. So mechanically, do we have the authority to do the transfer until the record is filed?
Your Honor, I believe that what would happen is we would, upon this court's ruling, the record would then be filed, and then it would essentially be near simultaneous, that once we know that there will be no issue. And it is the board's practice in these cases not to file a record and then to fight over transfer, but to do transfer first because of cases like this where it might take a while. And in the other circuit, then briefing and such would go forward.
Right. No, I understand that. It's just we're talking about very strict construction of the statute, and the statute is pretty explicit that the transfer is to the court that already has the record. So I'm really just wondering logistically quite how this would work.
We would have to file a record.
Okay, thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Carl Terrell on behalf of Remington. Your Honors, we respectfully submit that by adopting the position which petitioner has taken, that both statutory provisions will not be harmed. The two statutory provisions can be read totally in harmony.
What two statutory provisions?
Referring to Section 10F, 29 U.S.C. 160F of the National Labor Relations Act.
What is 10F? I mean, 10F is for perfecting an appeal.
Correct.
That has, 11. The statute we're talking about here, 2112, applies only in the circumstances where you have a race to the courthouse.
Yes, Your Honor.
So, I don't know. What does 12F have to do with this?
However, 10F, Your Honor, precisely states that upon the filing of the petition for review with the Court of Appeals, the clerk of the Court of Appeals shall forthwith transmit a copy of the petition or notice of the petition to the board. And, of course, in that instance, the clerk of the court would be forwarding a date-stamped copy of the petition.
So then, in your view, what does the phrase in 2112 from the persons instituting the appeal? What work does that language do?
That requires that the petitioner provide a date-stamped copy to the board, and that was done in this case when filing the petition in this court and ensuring and relying as well that per the statute in the National Labor Relations Act, Section 10F, that the clerk of the court would forthwith transmit notice of the petition, which by necessity would be date-stamped filed. So by complying with 10F, the petitioner simultaneously complied with 2112, Your Honor.
Well, Congress could have written it that way, but it didn't.
Well, it said...
Right, I mean, it could have said if there's a race to the courthouse, if people comply with 12F, whoever complies with 12F first, or whoever, that's the way it works, but that's not what it says. It says from the persons.
I'm sorry.
It says from the persons instituting.
Correct.
Yeah.
And 2112 is still fully in operation there, and by providing that as long as the two competing petitioners file within the 10 days, then the random selection occurs. And you know, that's the purpose for the board receiving a court date stamped copy so that there's no question as to when it was filed. And, of course, in this day and age of electronic court filing, this is readily determinable, which was not the case in 1988. I believe it was 1988 when the amendment to 2112 was passed.
Can I ask you a question, though?
What about the board's view here that what this provision does is it's a race to the courthouse, and Congress has basically said the people involved in the race have to perfect the appeal, and we don't want to put any burden on the clerk's offices of the courts of appeals to be part of that. In other words, it's the clerk's responsibility to get the petition perfected, but it's not the clerk's responsibility to participate or facilitate a race to the courthouse.
But in this instance, Your Honor, Section 10F of the National Labor Relations Act explicitly requires the clerk of the court to forthwith.
Yeah, but not within 10 days.
It says the language is forthwith, but whether it's actually received in 10 days or not, the fact that the petition was date stamped mm-hmm. at the time of filing will establish whether mm-hmm. the petitions were filed within the 10 days, and that is what controls under 2112. What 2112 looks at is, okay, there are two competing petitions seeking review in two different courts of appeal. The question
is... I'm sorry, can I back you up? I think the statute 2112 says the receipt by the board has to be within 10 days, not that it has to be date stamped within 10 days.
It states that the petition will forthwith be transmitted by the court.
I'm talking about 2112.
Yeah.
You're talking about 12F. Judge Millett's asking you about 2112.
Right. I believe what is controlling under 2112, I don't have the precise language at my fingertips, is the date of filing.
Excuse me, you don't have 2112 in front of you there?
I do.
Now that you get it, for purposes of this discussion.
It reads at A1, if within 10 days after issuance of the order, the agency commissioner officer concerned receives from the persons instituting the proceedings the petition for review with respect to the proceedings in at least two courts of appeal. So
right.
It does refer to receipt.
So the burden is on you to ensure receipt within 10 days, and that receipt has to be coming, the document has to be coming from you. I mean, I'll ask you the same question I asked the other side. How do you define the word from for purposes of this?
By the action that petitioner took in this instance of ensuring that a service copy would be provided by the clerk of this court as this court's clerk is required under Section 10F of the National Labor Relations Act. And I would just add, we have to recognize the reality that we are in the day and age of electronic court filing. And
well, not for purposes of this initializing documents.
I'm sorry?
Not for purposes of this initializing document, right? You did not electronically file this. You paper filed this.
We paper file it. We mail a copy of the notice at that time, but we relied on the clerk performing his or her
the
duty.
The clerk's duties set by the rules are not because the clerk works for you or is your agent in the same way that the post office right. or a delivery service would be. And so yeah. that seems to me materially different, as Judge Tatel was suggesting. The clerk's duties are not to accomplish your mission under 2112. The clerk has its own job to do.
The clerk does have a job to do, and that job is specified in 10F of the National Labor Relations Act to forthwith transmit to the board. And we have just as much right to rely on
if you get something in the mail from the clerk of this court as the return address label, and it includes a copy of a filing, do you say, aha, I just got some mail from my opposing counsel, or do you just say, I got mail from the court?
if I received mail from this court, I would say I received mail from this court.
Right, even if it happens to be transmitting a copy of a document.
If the court forwarded a service copy, I received it from the party that intended that service copy to be delivered, which is what petitioner did in this case.
They may have intended it, but you're going to say, I got mail from the court. It's going to have the official court logo on it. You're going to say, I got something from the court. That's the ordinary language meaning of from.
But if the content of the envelope from the court is from the person who intended me to receive it, I received it from the person sending it. It went through the court, but I received it, and I received it from the person sending it.
Let me ask you this. If we don't agree with you about the relationship between 12F and 2112, in other words, if we read this statute as saying 12F is for perfecting the appeal and 2112 is for situations where you have a race to the courthouse and it imposes a different and tighter obligation on the parties, if that's what we think, can you still prevail here?
Your Honor, I'm not sure I caught the last part of your question.
I'm sorry. My question was that if we don't agree with the way you read the statute, that is, if we think that 12F does not satisfy your obligations under 2112, that is, that Congress adopted these procedures and imposed tighter obligations on parties involved in a race to the courthouse under 2112, if that's the way you read the statute, can you still prevail? In other words, does your whole argument depend on your 12F argument? That's what I'm asking you.
My argument depends on 12F, Section 10F, Your Honor. But
I'm sorry, I keep saying 12F. I meant 10F. No, is that what confused my... if that's what confused you, I apologize.
No problem, Your Honor.
I meant 10F. If we think that 10F is separate and different, and that 2112 is aimed at where Congress imposed tighter obligations on parties involved in a race to the courthouse, can you still prevail?
First, Your Honor, I don't see how it's tighter.
But my question is, assuming you're wrong about that,
okay,
that it's a hypothetical that I'm asking you, if we read the statute differently than you, can you still prevail?
Yes, Your Honor, because under 2112 alone, the board received from petitioner a stamp filed copy. It came through the office of the clerk of court, but it was received from us. Mm-hmm. It was our petition. It was date stamped by the clerk. Only the clerk can date stamp it. In fact, the method we pursued is the fastest method possible, because otherwise we would have waited for a date stamp copy to come back to us through the mail or posted on e-mail, and then we would have mailed it through the post office to the board. In fact, the method we chose was the fastest possible method, because we filed an unstamped copy, and the natural course of what happens is the clerk stamps it, and then by the statute, they're required to forward it. We relied on that. We believe we have a right to rely on that. We believe, to the contrary, the board is pursuing form over function.
How does the board know that you care about venue? I mean, they're going to get that date-stamped copy from the clerk's office always if you perfect an appeal, right?
Yes.
So the point of 2112 is, is there a concern about venue so that you initiate this random selection process?
Right.
How does the board know if you don't comply with 2112? In other words, if you rely on 10F.
Well, we relied on the clerk forwarding the stamped copy at least to the same extent as we would rely on the post office. Plus, the reality is we know that there's ECF filing. The very next morning, we saw on ECF the notice to the board of our filing. The board had actual notice, and we followed 10F, and it was consistent with following 2112 in response to Judge Tatel's question.
But all the board knows at that point is that you're challenging their order.
Correct.
Right?
And that we filed in this court. And if the union had not filed in the Ninth Circuit, that would have been the end of the matter. The case would have been here. But the union did file in the Ninth Circuit, and so therefore the 2112 comes into play, and random selection should apply in this instance.
Well, because you want random selection, but suppose there's somebody who wants to perfect the appeal but is indifferent to where venue is.
I'm not sure I follow the question, Your Honor. If someone is indifferent to venue, I mean, we selected this venue. The Ninth Circuit selected, I mean, the union selected the Ninth Circuit. Apparently the board would rather be in the Ninth Circuit, and that's why they filed this motion to transfer.
Well, the board, I think, feels that it's legally required to be in the Ninth Circuit. Do you know that the board has made a conscious decision that it prefers the Ninth Circuit over this circuit?
I don't know that. No, fact,
I don't
think
so.
That's my supposition.
Well, let me just ask you, you keep referring to what the clerk's office told. Was this the affidavit from you? I can't
remember.
Yes, Your Honor. It was, yeah. But did the clerk's office say, what it says is, one of the copies would be used as the service copy for transmission, right?
Yes.
Okay, they didn't say anything about 2112, did the clerk's office say?
No, there was no discussion.
Yeah.
The purpose of my call that morning to the clerk's office was to confirm that I had correct information about the amount of the filing fee and the number of copies. And as I stated in the affidavit, I recall confirming with the clerk of the court that one of the service, in counting to that number of copies, that was for the purpose of providing a service copy to the board.
Okay.
When you're reading up 10F, I'm curious because it talks after right after the fourth with language, it talks about the aggrieved party essentially being required. They have the obligation to ensure the records filed. Provided in section 2112. So 10F itself, by its plain text, brings in 2112 and shifts away from the clerk and shifts to the aggrieved party as being the one who's responsible for doing whatever needs to be done to get the record filed in the court they want it in.
Correct.
Under 2112. So I don't see how 10F helps you at all.
Well, again, this court can adopt the position we've taken without doing any harm to 2112 or 160F under the National Labor Relations Act. Again, 10F provides that the clerk will forthwith transmit the notice. That satisfies the 2112 requirement
no,
that
the
board...
No, the text itself shifts. The burden, the record filing burden, the 2112 burden shifts textually in 10F to the aggrieved party, which is you.
Correct. Right. I mean, we are.
It shows that Congress didn't think what the clerk was doing was the same thing as triggering 2112. It left that textually in your hands.
Right. And again, the board received from.
Wait, why did you say right?
I'm sorry.
Why did you say right? It sounds based on Judge Millett's question that you would have said no.
Well, maybe I misapprehended Judge Millett's question. 2112, we acknowledge, is cited and identified in 160F, and 2112 governs the selection of venue, and we complied with 2112, even if this court chooses not to adopt our argument specifically relying on 160F. We contend that by the mechanism in 160F, we complied with 2112, and we acknowledge that 2112 governs venue in this matter. Our basic position is that the board did, in fact, receive from petitioner the petition that was date stamp filed. We simply went through the mechanism of having the clerk of the court provide it because 160F already requires the clerk of the court to do that. So we're not trying to create a different interpretation of 2112. We're saying we complied with 2112 literally as written because the board received from petitioner a date stamp copy.
No questions. Anything else? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
See, Mr. Jacobs, I think you used up all your time, but you can take 2 minutes if you'd like.
Thank you, Your Honor, for the extra time. I will conclude very briefly just by noting that the company is seeking the benefit of the statute without satisfying the requirements that Congress expressly elucidated. And as the court's questions indicate and counsel's answers indicate, the company is trying to have the clerk fulfill its own obligations. And the clerk's role under 160F should not be morphed into some type of obligation to make sure that a party satisfies the obligations under 2112. The clerk's job should not be to perfect a party's circuit race filings. And I will just lastly note at the end that, yes, the board maintains it is legally required to file the record in the venue that the statute indicates, and that this is not the board forum shopping as the company has implied. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Both the cases submitted.